The New York Yankees just gave Max Fried the largest ever guarantee for a lefty pitcher. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, December 11th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rao, First Pitch underscore MLB for Christian. And holy cow, a lot of stuff has happened since the last time we had a show. We were going to have a show on Tuesday morning and StreamYard broke a little bit. So sorry about that. But a ton of stuff has happened. We're going to get into the trade between the Blue Jays and the Cleveland Guardians for Andre Jimenez. We're going to get into Nathan Eovaldi going back to the Rangers. You know, there's a lot of stuff to get to, the MLB draft lottery. But first, the New York Yankees have given former Atlanta Braves starter Max Fried an eight-year, $218 million deal. Pending a physical, so it's not official yet, and they've not announced it. But it is the largest ever deal for a left-handed pitcher and the fourth largest deal for any pitcher in baseball history. The three bigger than that, Shohei Ohtani, special circumstances there, obviously. Yoshinobu Yamamoto got $325 million over 12 years. And Fried's new teammate, Gerrit Cole, got 9 years and $324 million. This deal, full no trade clause, no deferred money for Fried. This will be his age 31 through 39 seasons with the Yankees. Is this a good deal or a bad deal? And either way, does Max Fried need to send Juan Soto a gift basket?
Yeah, it definitely changes the feeling for Yankees fans for sure, right? Like right off the bat, you're upset about Juan Soto. And then this is a little bit of, I don't want to call it a consolation prize by any means, Lindsey, because we're talking about one of the best pitchers in the free agency. But, you know, you go from missing out on Juan Soto less than 24 hours to getting arguably the best pitcher on the market in Max Fried in just a short amount of time. Yeah, I think that gift basket might have to be sent over to Queens for Max Fried. This is really going to be an interesting rotation. I don't think it's a bad deal for New York. I don't think at all. I think you might call it a slight overpay if you want to call it and consider to how, you know, his value has looked up if you want to play on those value sites. But it seems like almost every starting pitcher in the market this year is getting a little bit of an overpay. They're getting, you know, the competition is coming into play. And I will say the fact that the New York Yankees missed out on Juan Soto, they were making sure that they weren't going to miss out on one of those two pitchers left in Max Fried and Corbin Burns. So not surprised they were willing to go a little more. I want to see what's next from this Yankee squad. Let's see if they are willing to spend more of that $750+ million they were willing to spend on Juan Soto. But overall, what an exciting time. If you're a Yankees fan, this rotation is stacked.
Yeah, the rotation as of now, and obviously FanGraphs doing what they do. They've already updated the roster resource depth chart here. Gerrit Cole is your one. Max Fried as your two, fellow lefty Carlos Rodon, who signed his own big deal a couple years ago, as the three with Luis Gil, and then behind him, somebody, right? Marcus, could be Marcus Stroman, could be Nestor Cortes, could be Clark Schmidt, could be Will Warren. You have a lot of different options to fill that fifth role in the rotation, and kind of makes you wonder, it's a Yankees team that obviously still has openings at every non-shortstop infield position. They need to figure out first, second, and third. Yes, they have Josh Chisholm, who can do one of those or center field. They need to integrate Jason Dominguez into the outfield. They're obviously, feels like they're not going to be done. And my question's going to be, and we had this conversation when Soto first went on the market. Do you sign Juan Soto for close to $50 million a year? Or do you go sign multiple other players? Well, 27 and a half or so of that is now going to Max Fried every year. What position, if you feel like, if you think that Jason Dominguez can play center and you think that Jazz can play second or third, then you've got to fill one infield spot plus first base. Can you do that and still stay under what Soto's AAV would have been? Or do you have to make a trade to finish filling out the roster?
if they do it the right way, and what I mean by the right way is what the Yankees fans are expecting to be the right way, the old Yankee way, right, Lindsay? If they do it that way, I think you can do it in both. I think you can make some solid free agent signings and you can still make the trade that you're looking for. Maybe a possibility of bringing Cody Bellinger in that has been moving around and circulating for so long. I think the biggest glaring need right now, though, now that the pitching portion's out of it, even though Juan Soto is not in the picture anymore, even though he played a corner outfield spot, I think the glaring need is second base. They need to figure out that middle of the infield, Gleyber Torres not being there. Right now, Fangraphs have a guy from the Arizona Fall League sitting in there, Caleb Durbin. So right now, I don't think that's going to be exactly who's going to start on opening day. I don't see that happening. I think that's who they have to address right off the bat is second base. And I think they will. But I would not be shocked if we continue to see what the Dodgers have done over the last 2-3 weeks and constantly been calling in names. We've seen passing bombs, the Dodgers signing Edmund, the Dodgers signing Snell over and over again. I would not be shocked if the next 4 or 5 days, it's the Yankees that are coming in. I think we're going to start seeing them start reeling in some names, maybe an Anthony Santander coming in. I could see him being a New York Yankee very soon.
Yeah, I do think that there is merit to getting Cody Bellinger simply because he does give you insurance if you're counting on some sort of youth, right? Right now, you have Jason Dominguez penciled into center. You have Ben Rice penciled into first. Obviously, Bellinger being able to play both of those spots, where one of those guys to stumble, he can step in and fill into their role. And then you still would need to either sign somebody for second with having Jazz Chisholm at third, or sign someone for third and have Jazz at second. So it feels like you could fill the role. You could make one more significant signing, kind of fill the role between that in a trade. And you could probably pencil in all of these, obviously barring injury and things like that. But Yankees definitely are not done. I expect them to keep on going. And what I think people forget when they see this deal for Fried, and they think that Fried is getting a little bit overpaid on this, something to remember, and I was trying to pull this up and find this right here. It ended up being from Sarah Langs. Who else? Since the start of 2020, for all pitchers who have thrown 550 innings or more, the lowest ERA in baseball, Max Fried, 281. Corbin Burnes is at 288. There's the other marquee free agent that they were after. Zach Wheeler at 294. Max Scherzer at 302. Garrett Cole at 312. And Framber Valdez at 312, who we'll get back to a little bit later in the show. So I feel like the Yankees, I agree with you. They're not done. I do think that, yes, you probably had to go fair value on Fried was probably 7 years instead of eight. Fair value was probably, if it was 8 years, probably right around $200 million, but maybe a little bit under. But you have to overpay in this market. And I do think that if it's me, if I'm having to figure out, do I want Corbin Burnes or do I want Max Fried, give me the guy that has not had a drop in velocity in Max Fried over a guy in Corbin Burnes who has had some peripherals going the wrong way for the last couple seasons. Although he's still been effective, he's not been the same pitcher from an inputs perspective that he was when, you know, in his Cy Young contending days. I do feel like despite Fried's frequent and frustrating, usually short injured list stints, he's still been one of the more reliable pitchers from an innings and a starts perspective, with the exception of the one extended absence in 2023.
You know, it's fascinating that the ERA thing from Fried and how he's one of the lowest with all those innings pitched. And that's a good thing. And it shows that this division that he's going into, this is arguably one of the hardest divisions in baseball. Well, he was just in the hardest division in baseball with National League East. It shows that he can do it at a high level. Teams around them were already expecting the Yankees to sign a left-handed pitcher. I mean, look at the Baltimore Orioles signing Tyler O'Neill. He crushes against lefties. So he's going to have some tough competition heading into this. I mean, it goes against Baltimore, goes against Toronto, Tampa Bay, Boston, you name it. But I think Max Fried's up for the challenge. You know, when I look at this rotation right now, Lindsay, and I see all these names that are great, when you call the Coles, the Frieds, you know, Rodon, Stroman, and then all the other ones lower, as you mentioned, a possible of Cortez with Schmidt, with Warren. It kind of reminds me at the beginning of this last season when we were kind of making the joke and laughing at all the names that the Dodgers had opening day, and it was like a graphic. I think MLB Network had it, and there was like multiple names on the graphic. Names were falling off the graphic with as many players and pitchers that were available for them heading into the year. Kind of has that same feeling. But when you look at these names compared to those names, the Dodgers at the beginning of the season, not many of these have injury concerns. And that's really exciting if I'm a New York Yankee fan heading into 2025, knowing that I have these amount of arms. And who's to say that they're not out? Are they? Would you say that they're out on Corbin Burnes now? I mean, is that a possibility that they could go for both? I'm not. It's not likely, but is it still a possibility?
Given that they were in the CBT last year, and so your qualifying offer penalties are higher. If it was Snell instead of Burnes, I would think they would at least have conversations about saying, could we bring both these guys in? I would expect if they were to keep adding pitching, I would expect it to be probably a lefty for the pin. Tanner Scott's obviously the premier one there. Maybe Fried's buddy AJ Minter, you know, would be an option for a lefty from the pin. Because if you look at the makeup of their bullpen right now, they project to have one lefty in the pin if you assume that Nestor Cortes is not in the rotation, but he's in the bullpen. And he said himself last year he wanted to be in the rotation. So not having lefties in the bullpen, like, yeah, it'd be great to have two or three in the rotation, but not having any in the bullpen is a problem. So I would expect, as much as I'd love to see them just say, you know what, we're just going to get the best pitching we possibly can and just destroy the East, I do think a lefty reliever like a Tanner Scott would be a better situation for them to go into and allow them to have money, have the Soto allocated money left over. Were they, you know, over trying to get another premier starter and dealing with the draft pick penalties that would come with that from having to give up more picks? It reminds me of the Giants having to give up picks for both Chapman and Snell and then losing Snell after only one season. Right.
It's true.
So, that's not true. But if it's me, I'm adding a lefty, a premier lefty reliever over another starting pitcher, even if they could get some money. Great. Cause when they're all healthy, Cole Fried Rodon is a intimidating 1-3, and Luis Gill was, you know, rookie of the year. Like, it's a really good 1-4. And if you can get two or three of those guys into a postseason series, or really the Tigers showed us, if you can get one into a postseason series, you have a chance, right?
There's been huge lists of all the players that the Yankees have missed out on. Bryce Harper, you know, Carlos Correa, you talk about, and then this case, Juan Soto after free agency, just to name a few. There's quite a big. And there are many people on social media talking about how Hal just can't get it done. Cashman just can't get it done. And then, you know, the trust level, if you will, for lack of a better term, the trust level is definitely on a scale of 1 to 10. I'd say after the Juan Soto news, it's probably down about a 3. Signing Max Fried and showing that they're still willing to get the right pieces and spend money, and if they continue to keep on from that, how far up is that going to rise? Where do you think Cashman and Hal are going to sit in the trust factor for these fans heading into spring training?
Adding Fried's great, but we mentioned so many options for your rotation that, yes, Fried's a postseason starter, right? Like, he's the top, like, he's a great number two. I don't know if you don't add a big bat for a corner infield spot or for the outfield or something that the fans are going to be happy. I don't think you can get above a 5 on the trust level without getting some sort of big bat for either, you know, something like left field. Maybe you put Grisham in center with Dominguez, let them play together, or a big bat for third base or first base or something like that. I feel like you still need to make one more significant move for the fans to not only have some trust back, but be confident that even without Juan Soto, you guys can still compete in one of the toughest divisions in baseball. I'm going to put it behind the National League East, but I'm a bit of a homer too. I still think you're probably not going to be above a 5 without adding that big bat.
I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I agree completely on that. This is going to be fun. And I do think we're going to hear the Yankees names quite often over the next few days while they're wrapping up winter meetings and getting into this weekend. I would not be shocked to hear a passing bomb or two from the Yankees over the next few days. Would not shock me in the slightest, Lindsay.
Another team that's been active here in free agency so far, surprisingly, I think, based on how poorly their season went last year, the Texas Rangers didn't make the postseason a year after winning the World Series. They have now gone They've added three players so far. Adrian Houser was a minor league deal. Still think he'll be in the majors before too long. They added catcher Kyle Higashioka early in December, right? Like, they went pretty early. And then just on Tuesday night, brought back Nathan Eovaldi on a three-year deal worth $25 million a year. So even with Max Scherzer likely not coming back to Texas, is a rotation in 2025 of 35-year-old Nathan Eovaldi, turns 37, Jacob DeGrom, who threw, I'll remind you, 10 and two-thirds innings last year in the majors, 33-year-old John Gray, 30-year-old Tyler Molly. Is that good enough to contend in that division? Or is it still like, do they still have work to do to try to reinforce other holes on the roster?
Yeah, I think they still have a little bit of work to do. And I think when you look at the age factor, I think you have to have some concern, because we just saw it in 2024, a team that tried to build with some veteran presence and it didn't work. And that was the St. Louis Cardinals. You thought that what they were going to do with their pitching rotation, adding some guys and the age wise, it just didn't work out. And they wound up being one of the worst teams in the National League. But overall, I think this is a little bit different because you're banking on Eovaldi. He has been fantastic while he's been with Texas. You haven't seen prime Jacob DeGrom yet since he's been with Texas. You really haven't. You haven't seen that New York Met Jacob DeGrom, I mean, absolute throw nails, best pitcher in the world style, that you just haven't seen that since he's been with Texas. And that's because of injuries. If you can get that from him, age 36 season or not, that's huge. And then obviously John Gray, I think he's a very good value piece. I thought there was a possibility of him being a potential trade candidate, but now that Eovaldi's staying, he's a great guy in the middle of your rotation. Tyler Mahle's really good as well. The bottom of your rotation, I think, still needs a little bit of work, like who's your fifth, sixth guy moving forward. But I'd like the rest of the pieces around, and they do have a young team as well. Remember, they're spending like what, $1 billion in their infield, Lindsay? So they have money. They were willing to spend it, and they stuck with those guys, with Marcus Semien, with Corey Seager. And then you still got guys like Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford, who are young and can still do what they do. And Josh Jung was injured for such a long time. So I think that there's definitely a lot of potential. And again, they're only 1 year removed from winning the World Series. And this team is not that different from where they were just a year and a half ago. So yeah. I'm hopeful, but I do think that there is definitely a little bit of more work to do if I'm Texas.
I will say, on the St. Louis Cardinals comparison, I would much rather bank on veterans Nathan Eovaldi and Jacob DeGrom than 100%. Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, right?
100%.
It's Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. It's like, wait a second, that's not really what I had in mind there. But I think for Texas, a lot of this is going to come down to health, right? Evan Carter missed almost the entire year. I think he got like 150 at-bats. Wyatt Langford got almost a full season, but he started off slow. If I remember right, I think he was hurt in spring. Took him a little while to get going. Adolis Garcia was not himself. Low was on himself. You mentioned Josh Jung with the broken, I think it was a wrist or a hand or something.
He was so hot until he got hurt too.
Yeah. He got so less than 200 at-bats in the season, right? Marcus Semien played every day, but it felt like he was playing through something because he batted like 237, a little uncharacteristic for him. And so when this team's healthy, I like their options at almost every position. I don't think they are the best in the league anywhere, but I think that, unlike the Cubs maybe, right? The Cubs are in that situation too. Like, they're solid all over. They're not the best in the league at any position, but I don't think the Cubs are really top five at any position. I think there's positions you can say, hey, the Texas Rangers can be top five at two or three or four positions if this dude is healthy and raking, right? I don't think that's something that a lot of other teams can say, is that the well-roundedness, the depth of the bench. If your bench is Kyle Higashioka, the rare catcher who hits bombs, Leody Taveras, a really good center fielder, as your fourth outfielder, and Ezekiel Duran, with Josh Smith rotating through every single position on the field on a daily basis and DHing and stuff, that's a really deep lineup. And you combine that with a rotation, like you said, a little top heavy. You know, Cody Bradford doesn't still have a ton of confidence down there at the five, but you've also got a lot of names on your 40-man roster that are prestigious names to step in. Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter, Owen White's in that group. Like, a lot of options there to to come up. Adrian Hauser, again, minor league deal. I think he'll make it back to the majors. You've got depth here. And would I love to see one or two more impact guys? I would, but I do think bringing Eovaldi back was a big deal. And I like this team to be competitive, especially if the Astros, which let's go ahead and get to that, especially if the Astros end up taking a step back, because reports came out from the winter meetings on Tuesday afternoon that they are looking at possible trades of either or both outfielder Kyle Tucker and starting pitcher Framber Valdez. Valdez was on that list with Max Fried for, since 2020, some of the best stuff in baseball, best ERA in baseball. Is it going to be a problem for the Astros to move on with a year of team control left from either of these guys versus trying to pay one of them?
Well, we found out with Bregman that didn't work, right? And then they seemed to be okay with the Altuve a couple of years ago. I think if you look back in hindsight, I think they wish they probably wouldn't have done that. Now, as an Astros fan, you would probably love to have Altuve for his career, but as he's aging,
I mean, he had a 225 with 20 homers last year, but I wonder about how that's going to age, Yeah.
Right. But when I'm looking at Kyle Tucker, I guess my thought process is, and I'm trying to put in my hat with Dana Brown here, and like, how is he thinking? The Astros had that crazy run. They started off with the franchise worst start in since 1969 or something like that, still found a way to get to the postseason. And they did that while Kyle Tucker was injured. Right. So maybe they're thinking that they can still be a competitive team inside this division without a guy like Kyle Tucker. They can sell or trade him while he can, get some prospects, move up. They do have some nice outfielders in the prospect system right now that are, very close to competing. So maybe that's their thought process. But in my mind, Kyle Tucker's one of the best baseball players in Major League Baseball right now. If you think that you're not going to be able to sign him, then yeah, you need to find a way to trade him, because you've got to get value and you can't miss out. Like, you're probably only going to get a potential comp pick if you can't get Alex Bregman back this season.
Yeah. Kyle Tucker, 7 years in baseball, .274 hitter with 125 home runs. Prior to this last season where he got hurt and only played 78 games, he had seasons of 30, 30, and 29 home runs. And when he only had 29 home runs, he also led the American League in RBI with 112. Three consecutive MVP finishes, 20th, 15th, and 5th. A gold glove, three all-star selections, a silver slugger. I would argue he's one of the more underrated players in baseball. He's been worth, the last 4 years, I'm trying to do math in my head real quick, 21.2 war per baseball reference over four seasons. And I guarantee you 75% of baseball fans can't pick him out of the lineup like they could other, other prominent great players. But at the same time, I do worry they've traded a lot of players out of this system for different things. And I'd kind of, as a recovering prospect guy, I don't love any of their higher level outfield prospects, right?
I like Kennedy Jacob Corona. Melton. I like Jacob Melton.
Jacob Melton, Pedro Leon, Colin Barber. Like, these guys are all okay, but none of them really move the needle to me. And you're already in a position where Yordan Alvarez, they really don't want to play him in the outfield. And so right now you've got Chaz McCormick, who really struggled last year. You've got Jake Myers. Mauricio Dubon's best value, I feel like, is a utility guy that can step in anywhere. That super utility dude, he can play second. He can play, I think, anything but short, really. He can play first. He can play center field. He can do whatever. And, Taylor Trammell, they acquired him in, November from the Yankees, I think, off of waivers or something like that. But it just feels like you really can't afford to trade Kyle Tucker unless you can get a starting caliber outfielder back. And if it's me, I'm trading Framber Valdez over Kyle Tucker unless you think there's just no way to re-sign Kyle Tucker, right? And even then, you've got to get a starting caliber outfielder and then prospects for Tucker. But look at what this organization's done with pitching, right? Valdez, Hunter Brown, Ronel Blanco came out of nowhere. Spencer Arrighetti, Luis Garcia. That's your rotation as of right now. And you've got quality dudes that were hurt, dealt with Tommy John or other surgery that are going to eventually come back, right? JP France, Christian Javier. Like, the pitching in this organization has really always been good. Now, I don't love any of their high-level prospects right now that finished the year in AAA, but it feels like it's more – Valdez is more replaceable, but Tucker's going to be more expensive and more valuable in a trade, and so that's what makes this hard. Really, it kind of feels like Houston shouldn't be in a position of trading stars away anyway. They're going to end up letting Bregman walk. They let Correa walk. At some point in time, you've got to retain players if you want to continue, you want to get back into the World Series, which you didn't for the first time in what felt like a decade this year.
Yeah, it's concerning in my mind. If you're the Astros and you are, you know, you've made it to so many postseasons. Yeah, you didn't make it to the ALCS for the first time in what seems like, as you mentioned, a decade. I think it was actually 8 straight ALCSs, if I remember correctly. But, you know, as soon as you get to the winter meetings, you're floating names out of expiring contracts. To me, even if they don't make those moves, you have to have this feeling that they're going to take a step back in 2025 and moving forward. You have to have that feeling regardless, because as you mentioned, you're probably not going to get Bregman. He's probably going to go somewhere else, although that there is an offer on the table, reports from the Astros, but who knows if it's going to be enough. And then we'll just see what happens moving forward with the rest of these teams and the rest of these players. But when I look at this, I'm with you. I think Valdez could be traded because you have a great pitching staff moving forward. I think you can get some good value for him. But if you really don't think you have a 1% chance, if you think you have a slight chance, I mean, cue the Dumb and Dumber meme, Jim Carrey saying it, you tell me there's a chance, Lindsay, if there's one inch of a shot of him staying in Houston, you don't trade Kyle Tucker. You throw the bag at him and you keep him in Houston. But if there's no way, there's things that we don't know, then yeah, you try to move on from him and you get what you can. And you try and do it this offseason. You don't wait for the deadline. You try to get as much as you possibly can from him moving forward, even if that means taking a little bit of step back in the AL West, because who knows, even a step back in the West might still get you the division win, because this is one of the craziest divisions in baseball.
It absolutely is. Getting into some trade talk real quick. We had some rumors, speaking of the one we just did, more rumors of trades happening and a trade that did happen. The Toronto Blue Jays acquire Gold Glove second baseman Andre Jimenez, one of the best defensive infielders in baseball, in a deal. They also got reliever Nick Sandlin, a right-hander. They're sending first baseman, second baseman Spencer Horwitz, and minor league outfielder Nick Mitchell. Now, two things. One, acquiring Jimenez, this reminds me of the Dalton Varsho deal. Amazing defender, has had some flashes of offensive production. I think it was 22 for Jimenez when he was fantastic with the bat. And then since then has kind of struggled, and you have to figure that out. But is this Bo Bichette insurance? Is the plan here, Jimenez will play second for a year, kind of like Joey Ortiz played third base for a year for the Brewers, and then when they lost Willy Adames in free agency, Joey Ortiz is going to kick over to short. Does Andre Jimenez start at shortstop on opening day for the Blue Jays in 2026?
In 2026? Ooh, okay, yeah.
That the plan? Is Bo Bichette going to walk in free agency and they're going to move Andre Jimenez to shortstop?
I will say this, that if that's the case, then Toronto blew it the first time around, because obviously they could have got a huge deal for him at the trade deadline last season when there were so many shortstops out and about. I mean, if you told me that Bo Bichette and Tommy Edman were on the trade block right now, in last season, you would have took Tommy Edman over Bo Bichette and injured Tommy Edman over Bo Bichette. I don't think you would have, right? I think Bo Bichette would have been a Dodger if you would have been willing to move on from him. But if you have the feeling now and you're trying to make a security blanket moving forward, thinking you're going to lose Bo Bichette, then I don't know what Ross Atkins is doing. But I do think that's a possibility. And when you look at what just happened with the Juan Soto deal and how big that was, there's another guy who's a pending free agent, Lindsay, and that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's coming up at the end of the year. And that's a huge hit if they can't figure out for Toronto. So maybe it's a future piece for more than just maybe being the potential shortstop, maybe being the star in Toronto moving forward. That's a wild thing to say.
Yeah. He's absolutely got to love Vlad Guerrero's got to love going to free agency a year after Soto did. I mean, if nothing else, you have to expect that's going to adjust the market a bit for any top tier free, the premier free agent in all of baseball every year has now for 2 straight years gotten a record contract. I don't think Vlad Guerrero is going to get a contract bigger than Ohtani or, or Soto, but that's probably moved from, if he has another season like the great one he had last year, that's probably moved from a $300 and change million deal to a $400 million deal. For if he can find baseman. One long enough. Yeah, that's the thing. First baseman makes it a little bit different from Otani and from Soto, but either way, interesting to kind of figure out there. Speaking of trades,
what's the last huge first baseman contract? Is it Pujols? Is Pujols the huge one?
I feel like it was like Pujols is Miguel Cabrera. Neither one of those arguably worked out long term. Pujols was like 13 years, so he signed it in like his 30s. And I mean, because Harper was signed as an outfielder, right? And then he moved to first base. So I think that's the big. That's the big surprising thing there is he was signed as an outfielder and moved to first base. You can't group him in that. I want to say it's Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols. And you could argue neither one of those really worked out that well.
Not at all.
Yeah. But speaking of Pujols and the Angels, rumors are that they're looking to trade an outfielder. It should be done this week. Everybody expects it's going to be Taylor Ward, but can you imagine if it was Mike Trout, how good would Mike Trout be on the Philadelphia Phillies? Because
that's the only place you would go. That's the only place that you could move Mike Trout is if it was the Phillies. And, you know, Troy, we were messing around in the Discord when we were talking, get ready for this show. And Troy was saying that he would basically trade everybody for Trout. No, I'm just kidding. But he was willing to make some big moves and a couple prospects for Trout. I agree with you, though. I think it's Taylor Ward. But Joe Adell could also be on the move. I mean, that's a name that we're also talking about. Joe Adell could also be a guy that's moved. He's young. He's had some ups and downs in his career. He hasn't had a great rapport with Ron Washington in his first season. So that could be a guy that we're also looking to be on the trade market.
Flip side of this, though, career 2.11 hitter in 308 games. He's been negative war in his career, 649 OPS. I don't think Joe Adell has that much value, right? His highs, his best year. From a power perspective, the only year he's hit double-digit home runs was 2024, where he hit 20 homers. He drove in 62 in 130 games. I don't think Joe Adell has that much trade value. I don't think it'd be reported that they're close to making a deal for trade an outfielder if that outfielder they were trading was Joe Adell, right? It just doesn't feel like he's that valuable to anybody.
I mean, that's fair. I wonder if
opportunities have figured out and hasn't done it.
I wonder if some team thinks that they can fix him because he definitely has a lot of those tools that a lot of the scouts like to say. I mean, I remember when he was coming up and one of the top prospects in the Angels system, how everybody just couldn't stop talking about Joe Adell because he was one of the top, you know, speedsters. He was just so good with the bat and it just didn't really pan out at that major league level. I think there were some injuries involved as well, but I mean, there's a reason he was a first round pick back, you know, almost a decade ago, 2017. I wouldn't be shocked to see him move. Actually, I think it would be the best thing for him, a change of scenery, but I'm with you. It's probably not being leaked if it's a guy like Adell being traded.
Yeah. Last thing before we go, the MLB draft lottery was yesterday. This is the anti-tanking provision. They weight your chances of getting the number one overall pick based on the record that you had the previous year with some rules about revenue sharing, repeating in there and things like that. The Washington Nationals had just a 10% chance of getting the number one overall pick. Three teams had better odds ahead of them, the Rockies and Marlins at 22.5%, the Angels at 18%. But it, in fact, was the Washington Nationals picking number one next summer. The Angels are picking second. The Mariners jumped up to 3. The Rockies at 4. Cardinals at 5. Pirates at 6. The rest of the order was set by winning percentage. So the Marlins are at 7th, Blue Jays 8th, Red Sox 9th. The White Sox were at 10th because as a revenue sharing team, they cannot pick in the lottery two consecutive years. They are kicked back to 10th with the Oakland A's at the Athletics at 11. Biggest winner, biggest loser of the draft lottery this year.
Has to be the Nationals, and I know that's a cop-out, but how cool is it going to be that in the Metro DC area, we're going to have Jackson Holliday versus Ethan Holliday, Nationals and Orioles? That's what's going to happen, because you've got to expect Ethan Holliday is going to be the first overall pick, at least I think that's going to be. That's a pretty fun thing. And losers, I mean, it's got to be the Marlins. Has to be. You thought you were going to get the first overall pick. You go to seven.
The best odds at 22.45% and not picked. I'm going to say, like, the Nationals had the fourth best odds of the top pick. So, yes, it's huge to jump to number one. The bonus pool you get is a huge deal. It's such a bigger bonus pool than anybody else gets. But I'm going to say my winner's the Mariners. They had the 15th worst odds at 0.53%, and they're picking third. The Cardinals also made a big jump up. They had the 13th odds at 0.82%, and they're picking fifth. To me, both those teams really kind of jumped up and outperformed where you would expect them to go. Again, they would have been picking 13th and 15th had it not been for the lottery. Instead, they're in the top five. So Nationals, obviously, the big pool, but the Mariners, the Cardinals both got huge jumps up in the standings where every draft has a top four, a top six, a top five of the premier talents. And it's too early to know how many guys you're going to have at the very, very top, but usually you have at least five. And you feel like those two teams went from not having a chance to get one of those premier talents to now having a chance to get one of the best guys in the draft. Not necessarily the intended outcome of the draft lottery, but just another reason why you can't bank on just tearing it down and being awful and get a number one overall pick like the Marlins. And sometimes you can even get lucky like the Guardians did last year and the Reds, or like the like the Mariners and Cardinals did this year.
Yeah, and I will say this. I'm excited. We definitely have to have some draft coverage on this show when we get closer to it. Yep. Because my favorite, and I'm pretty sure he's your favorite prospect in the draft this year, at least one of them, Ike Irish, is going to be in the draft. And I know Auburn, you're an Auburn guy, but I'm really excited to see where he lands. So definitely got to talk a lot of draft. I don't think he's going to be in the top five or anything like that. Could be, but
he could be. I've seen some boards. He's a top 10 pick as of right now. So we'll see. Catcher's always a premier offensive position. We'll see what happens. And we'll be, you know, back tomorrow. More of this has been First Pitch for Wednesday, December 11th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. You know, when we drop a new episode. And also leave us a 5-star review because we love words of affirmation. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.